When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We're talking prospects who could get called up soon. I think that's one of the more exciting things that we get to do during the season, kind of pound the pavement, talk about players that could potentially help your fantasy team, help your favorite big league team, whatever it may be. We're going to draft them, which is going to make it really fun. Jack and I put together a list. We may have missed a couple guys, but we put together a list of guys that we think are imminent big leaguers, and we're going to draft them based on proximity and ability and try to weigh those things. Jack, one thing that we do have to start with, though, is Jackson Holliday, who was a guy that a lot of people were saying, when's he going to get called up? When's he going to get called up? Why didn't he make the opening day roster? Blah, blah, blah. And he's up, and it's been really ugly through his first 30-something plate appearances, not sounding the alarms or anything like that. But we do have to have a conversation of what's been going on and what do the Orioles, a World Series contender team, do? Because how much leeway do you give baseball's best prospect here when you're trying to win ball games immediately?
Well, Aram, I hope you had a nice weekend. Happy Monday to you. Now we get into the negative, right? I mentioned to you right before we hit the record button, it's crazy that people are going to forget what they said 2 weeks ago, where you had everybody online, offline. I was watching MLB Network. Like, everybody in baseball was saying, yeah, this is borderline service time manipulation. He's hitting the crap out of the ball in Norfolk. What's going on? And then he gets up and he starts his big league career, what, 1-for-30 at this point? And now it's like, oh, that's what you get for fast-tracking a 20-year-old to the major leagues. No, remember what you said. Like, you should think about the words that come out of your mouth and then retain what came out of your mouth 2 weeks ago. So it's a tough one to see everybody kind of pounding the pavement for this guy to come up and now everybody pounding the pavement for him to go back down. It spurred the thought in my mind that posed the question, when is it okay optically to send him back if he's really struggling? Because that's not a conversation you have with really anybody in Major League Baseball except for the number one prospect in all of baseball, the consensus number one prospect in all of baseball, because this was a guy that was billed as, oh, like, you know, for better or worse, who knows how this guy's career is going to pan out. But he was billed as, oh, the next Cal Ripken's up. Like, hey, he's wearing a Ripken's number. Like, here we go. It is a changing of the guard moment and the future becomes the present. Now, you can't send that guy back to Norfolk after 15 crappy games.
No.
Do you send him back after 30 crappy games? I don't know when the threshold is, so I kind of want to talk that through with you.
I think you got to start with what is going on. I think you got to like diagnose the issue and then go from there, because I do think that that's a big part of it, right? I mean, how much of it is bad batted ball luck? How much of it is him getting blatantly overpowered and just looking a little bit lost up there? I'd say a lot of it is unfortunately the latter so far. And it's pretty shocking. Look, we talked about it and I said, I think there's going to be some growing pains. I think there's going to be some points where, you know, he's not looking like the number one prospect in baseball because it's a big jump. And remember, this guy was, you know, flew through the minor leagues last year. So it's easy to forget where he was at the beginning of last year, which is still relevant because it wasn't that long ago. And now here he is at 20 years old, you know, at the major league level. What I'm concerned about now is I see one, a kid that's pressing a little bit, and two, he's getting overpowered by fastballs. And that's an interesting side of it where, I mean, he's pretty much consistently on time, and that's hasn't really been an issue for him with spring training. We saw him turn around tough pitches in tough spots. I think throughout the minor leagues, he's faced some really high end velocity and been able to handle it. But so far, I mean, it's a small sample, but he's just getting blown away by fastballs. So 22% swinging strike rate on fastballs is just, it's just not going to fly. You're striking out, you know, half the time right now. 50% K rate is also not going to fly when you're a guy that's, you know, been lauded as a plus to plus plus hitter. We've talked about it, like the underlying batted ball data, like the contact rates, a little bit lower than other guys that are tabbed as those plus plus hitters, but he just has such a knack for hitting and such a feel to hit. And just, I think, such a good control of his at-bats. That's what really allowed him to climb so quickly. And then it seems like the second he's got to the big leagues, that control and that ability to manage your at-bats, if you're Jackson Holliday, is kind of just evaporated. And there's one AB that, you know, when I was just watching through it, that really sticks out to me was a bases loaded one out at-bat. I think this was yesterday, as we're recording this on a Monday. Bases loaded, one out. He's facing a lefty in Angel Zerpa, who's going in and out, in and out, in and out. I think the first pitch was on the outer half, like nibbled the corner. Second pitch was just off the outside part. And then the next two pitches were inside. One more back away on the outside corner eventually works it full. And the last pitch, the payoff pitch, is a fastball, 94 miles an hour, right down the middle, like bullseye right down the middle. And Jackson Holliday took it for strike three. The bases are loaded. I mean, it's a full count. If you're not swinging there on a pitch that's middle, to me, that's saying, hey, I'm looking for a walk here, or I'm really guessing. And Jackson Holliday's never been a guy that's guessing that hard. He's a guy that sits fastball and has the adjustability to hit a breaking ball, or in certain spots knows when he can sit breaking ball. Bases loaded in the sixth inning in a 4-0 game with one out. I'm sitting fastball in a full count. And adjusting. Easier said than done. I don't have to be up there in the box, but that was something that I just had not seen from Jackson Holliday. And there's issues beyond that, but that at bat was just unfamiliar. Like, I've just not seen a guy that's thinking himself that much into a hole. So I think to answer your question, if that continues, like if we continue to see at bats like that, where he's just taking a fastball down the middle for strike three, where he just doesn't look like a guy that has confidence in himself, then I think you got to think about sending him back to AAA. Right now, I think you got to give him a little bit more run. If it was even half bad, like if it was 30% K rate, and similar numbers, I'd say give him multiple weeks. I don't care. This team's good enough. But right now, it's like it's borderline demoralizing. I think you got to give him one more week. And if it doesn't even turn up a little bit, then you probably have to send him back. But if it even gets marginally better, I think you just keep riding it out.
So that's my thing. And I like the word that you just used, demoralizing. That's how it feels at this point, because he is the story in baseball right now, for better or worse. Like, there are a lot of guys that are performing incredibly well. Shohei Ohtani sitting like 368 right now. Ellie De La Cruz is as must watch as he was when he first came up last year. But the story in baseball right now, because I think baseball fans, and I'm guilty of it too, are just like inherently negative. We see great player really struggle, that becomes the story in our mind because we grew up on this game of failure and we say, oh, even the best fail. And this guy was the best in the minor leagues and he's failing right now. So the question is, how demoralizing will it have to get for him to go back? And, you know, like, I'll throw out some, like, a stat line for you. He's 1-for-30 right now with 2 walks and 16 Ks. Is it 2-for-50 that it's too demoralizing? Is it 1-for-40? And there's no right answer for Mike Elias, for me, for you, for any of you sitting at home or in the car right now listening to this show. There's no right answer to that question. It's all internal. Like, Jackson Holliday needs to ask himself that question. And I'm sure that he's having honest conversations with people in that clubhouse saying, like, hey, how are your mentals right now? Like, how are you feeling right now? And the moment that he doesn't feel supremely confident in his abilities, I think is when you have to go get him the everyday reps against pitchers that he's objectively better than. Because right now, at age 20, he's not objectively better than the competition. And this is probably the first time in his life that he's not objectively better than the competition.
Yeah, it also shows you the difference between AAA and the big leagues, which is a great lead into the conversation we're going to have about these guys that could be imminent big leaguers and what kind of impact they can make. And we're guilty of it ourselves, where it's like, oh, call this guy up, he can help you. And a lot of times they can. But also, there's a lot of reminders of how big of a leap this is. I think comparatively, like, Wyatt Langford's been really struggling as well over his last 30 at-bats. But his last 30 at-bats, he's still striking out less than 30% of the time. He's putting the ball in play. It just looks like a guy that is in a little bit of a slump. Whereas Jackson Holliday looks like a guy that was thrown into the deep end and struggling to swim, which is shocking because every indication was that he is ready. And that just, again, shows you how big of a leap it can be, both from an ability standpoint and a mental standpoint. And I wouldn't underestimate just how much responsibility and weight this was for Jackson Holliday to wear. And
it's a huge amount of responsibility.
Yeah. I mean, he's as anticipated of a debut as we've had in a long time. You know, you had the away media scrum just all there to talk to him. Here are his questions. He's managed, I think, the fanfare and the eyeballs and the incessant questions and energy and all those things as well as any 19 to 20 year old can, like, humanly possible. And that doesn't mean that it's not difficult inside. And especially when you're pressing for that first hit through the first few games, and then you're playing for a team that is very competitive, that has World Series aspirations, and you're not helping, that has to make it mount. In AAA, yeah, Norfolk won a championship, sure. And yes, it's easier for him to perform. But even if he wasn't performing there, I don't think it weighs as much, because it's like, okay, these games don't really matter. Now you're in Baltimore, and you already know the expectations that are around you, but you also have a team of young studs around you and a team that is very focused on trying to win a World Series, and you in the nine hole are an automatic out. Like, that has to weigh, and that has to be something that makes the struggles compound, even for the most talented prospects in the world, which Jackson Holliday is the consensus number one. I do think it's that mental side, and that's why I don't know if sending him down necessarily helps. I'd like to give him a little bit more time and see if he can settle in, you know, just get a little bit more acclimated to the clubhouse. I'm sure that clubhouse is extremely supportive of him. Sure. I'm sure that they see him as a guy that can help them and not somebody that shouldn't be there, right? Like, they saw what he did in spring training. They've seen what he's done, you know, probably on the backfields, batting cages. Like, they've seen how impressive he is. I don't think anybody in that clubhouse feels as though Jackson Holliday doesn't belong there or doesn't deserve to be there. Everybody thought that he should have been there on opening day. So for that reason, I feel like maybe he can settle in a little bit more. Maybe he has this kind of mental, you know, epiphany. And I don't think it's anything that's majorly mechanical. It's the same swing that's been working at every stop. I think he's just pressing a little bit. His timing's a little bit off, and that's just kind of caused things to build.
So we've fully dove into the Jackson Holliday perspective. The last thing that I want to do on this conversation is get to the Orioles perspective on this too, because that is an important perspective on this. And I was talking with Peter on the Just Baseball show about this, and he said, if you're the Orioles, I think you're just okay forfeiting the nine spot right now. And I said, okay, hold on. Take a step back and think about what you just said. And, like, I understand that it's Jackson Holliday, but from an objective on the field perspective, okay, I get it. The Orioles are immensely talented 1 through 8. But if you have the opportunity to put a guy in the nine hole that's going to hit 250 versus a guy that's getting blown up in the nine hole, which one are you choosing? Like, right now, there are better options to be the everyday nine hole hitter for the Baltimore Orioles than Jackson Holliday. So I thought that was kind of a silly argument there from the Orioles perspective. Like, the Orioles, if they can get better at one spot in the lineup, you go get better. And I don't think that's true for every team in baseball. I think that's true for maybe 5 or 6 teams in baseball. If you are a 500 team, you give Jackson Holliday all the runway you got. If you are a cellar dweller, you give Jackson Holliday all the runway you got. But he entered a very unique situation with Baltimore where they're trying to be the best team in baseball. And it's tough. Like, that's the reason he didn't make it out of camp. And now I think it may be the reason they pulled the trigger on this sooner than so many other teams would.
It's funny because we were in the same spot, you know, a couple weeks ago ourselves and saying, oh, well, like, call up Jackson Holliday, he can't be worse than Arias. And, you know, here we are. So, like, I do feel like you look at it from the, I think, a wider view, and you see that Jackson Holliday is going to be a guy that has a chance to make a bigger impact for you at the end of the year. So the question ultimately to me becomes, what's the best way to get Jackson Holliday back to where he needs to be? And maybe some may believe he's a unique circumstance where you let him keep trying at the big league level, or they may go the traditional route, send him back to AAA, work on whatever they think is the issue timing wise right now, and go from there. I want to see him get another. He needs a little bit more time. I mean, 30 at bats is just nothing. I know it's been terrible, but like small sample, and he has faced some tough arms so far. I would like to see him get, I think, almost a duplicate sample and just see where it trends. So I'd probably give him another week and a half to 2 weeks. And if it's really, really bad, like, you could shelter him from lefties right now in the meantime and give him another 10 to 14 days of just facing righties, see how it goes, and then go from there. I think he's earned at least a little bit more runway than, you know, these 32 at bats or whatever it's been, even though it's been really ugly. At the end of the day, okay, he strikes out four less times and picks up two more hits. We're going to give him an extra 2 weeks now. So, like, that to me, like, that's just a ball bounce in one way or another, a flare, like, and all of a sudden now we're giving him more runway. I think he's earned it based on who he is. Yeah. And, you know, you can't change your assessment on a guy after 30 something at bats or plate appearances. So I think they're going to give him a little bit more time, but they should shelter him from lefties in the meantime for sure.
I think they're going to give him more time. I think they should give him more time. You think, what, 60 plate appearances is when you kind of reassess the situation?
Yeah. Yeah. I'd say probably, right around there, right around 60, I'd 65.
I hit 50 plate appearances before you reassess, 50 to 55. So I'm a little bit sooner than you, but I'm with you. He needs, like, more runway.
Yeah. I mean, and we'll see. I mean, I'm rooting for him, obviously, because he couldn't have handled the whole situation better. And again, I can't imagine the pressure that's on him, but that's as high profile of a call up as we've had in a while. And hopefully he gets things rolling soon here. We're going to talk a lot about, I think, a handful of guys that either on the offense or pitching side could get called up relatively soon. And the way that we wanted to kind of structure it was because we want to make sure we go through the guys that, you know, I think are most likely. And the best way to do that is by doing a draft, as we always like to do. So the criteria essentially of this draft is we compiled names that we think are imminent big leaguers, guys that are going to get up there relatively soon, or should get up there relatively soon. And then we're going to draft based on a balancing act of these two criteria. One, their sheer ability and how good we think they could be at the big league level this year. Two, the likelihood that they actually get called up and how direct of a path that they have to getting caught up. Like, I'd love to talk about Connor Norby on this episode, but Connor Norby is probably not going to be one of the first names that you and I draft because while he is more than able to, or more than I would say ready to get the call up based on what we've seen, we don't know if he's going to succeed up there, but he's earned it at this point. There's no room for him. And we don't really know when there will be room for him. So for that reason, he's not going to be one of the first names picked. So the ability criteria there, the numbers there, the path not there. And that's why he's a guy that's probably not going to be considered here. Jack, do you want to walk us through the names on the list that we compiled? And then, you know, you and I will kind of go back and forth here and draft it and make our case.
Yeah. So we're doing two separate drafts. We're doing a hitter draft and a pitcher draft, and we're going to have four picks each. We've got a list of at least eight. I think there's 10 names on our hitter list, and then there's 11 or 12 names on our pitcher list. Shout out pitcher list. Great tool. Yeah. But we're going to start with the hitter draft, and the names that we've got are Heston Kjerstad, Kobe Mayo, Connor Norby, the Baltimore Orioles, Aurelvis Martinez and Addison Barger of the Toronto Blue Jays, Joey Loperfido of the Houston Astros, Jordan Beck of the Colorado Rockies, Tyler Black of the Milwaukee Brewers and James Wood of the Washington Nationals. So I think that's 10 names that we've got there. I'll give you the first pick and we'll snake it. So I get 2 and 3.
Okay. Yeah, I'm trying to make sure there's no other names we missed there, but that sounds about right.
Did I mention Kyle Manzardo? I didn't mention Manzardo. No, Kyle Manzardo.
Manzardo should be in there too. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So this is a unique spot because like a lot of these guys are kind of blocked. And I think there's a few different ways that you can kind of look at this from a performance perspective. We talked about it right on the last episode. Or at least at some point we talked about how Kerstad's kind of just that blocked guy. And it feels like Michael Busch all over again, but at the same time, he's so good right now that they may just have to find a spot or he might just be trade capital. Again, it becomes a really tough juggle though, because I think there's other guys like Joey Loperfido. You look in Houston, I mean, their first basemen are I think in the negative WRC plus department, but Loperfido, as much as I love him and think he can be a really good big leaguer, is not going to put up, I think over the course of his first 5 years of his career, probably not going to put up the same numbers of a Heston Kerstad or a James Wood, or even maybe a Kyle Manzardo. So it puts us in this unique spot. This is tough. I'm probably going to still just go with Kerstad just because I feel like what he is doing is just on a different level to everybody else. And when you're doing it like this, they're going to figure something out. Like, I just think that they're going to have to figure something out at some point. I don't know what it is. I don't know how they're going to do it. I love Ryan O'Hearn. Mountcastle is healthy and looks like he's, you know, you see how he can hit when he's healthy. But I got to go with Kerstad just because what he's doing is just nuts. And he gives you some positional versatility, being able to play corner, outfield, and first base. Like, I ultimately feel like this is just one of those situations that has to settle itself out at some point because of the way that he's hitting. 1176 OPS. He's cut the chase rate down a little bit. He is running into baseballs as hard as ever and just looks really tough to beat right now, no matter what you throw his way. I don't know if the Orioles find a spot for him. Someone gets hurt, whatever it is. It is weird to have a pick that's like kind of blocked right out of the gate. But I just think that there's a way that this settles itself, because you just can't have a guy putting up these numbers in AAA for another full month or two and not do something about it.
He's too good to be blocked at this point. And the only other guy, and we'll get to him on the pitcher front, the only other two guys that we've got are Paul Skeens that are making things look like a video game. Like, Kerstad is making minor league baseball look like a video game right now. Skeens is making minor league baseball look like a video game right now. Mike Bove, who was hitting, 533, he was making it look like a video game in the Brewers system. But he's very far off, so he's not getting there. But I'm with you. Like, too good to hold down. My second pick, so my first pick, the second pick, I might reach a little bit here just because I have empathy for this guy, because his stock has been a total roller coaster. Aurelvis Martinez. Mm-hmm. Aurelvis Martinez at this point in AAA with Buffalo through 18 games is slashing .333, .392, .681. It's a .1073 OPS. In 18 games, he's got 13 extra base hits, 18 driven in, and he's punched out 17 times in 79 plate appearances. That is a just fine clip. The other element that I want to add to this, you know where he's been playing literally every day?
Second
base.
Yeah.
So I know Biggio has been fine. I know Ernie Clement's been good off the bench, but you're telling me that you can get the juice of Aurelvis Martinez and inject it immediately into the Blue Jays lineup on a per day basis? Give me Aurelvis at number two.
Yeah, I was between those two guys. And really what ultimately, I think Aurelvis has the easier path. But Kerstad, I think, translates better. You never know, though. Aurelvis could be a guy that gets up there and just stands on his head. And what he's been doing, by the way, over the last week and change is nuts. It's last 7 games, 6 home runs, you mentioned. But also, how about the one that went 470 in Columbus? 114 off the bat. Like, these aren't just home runs. These are mega nukes. Several of these well over 400 feet. He's punishing the baseball. But the thing is he's getting a lot of sliders. He's swinging and missing at plenty of sliders. And the chase rate's still, it's better, but relatively high. So it is one of those guys that I think easily is the top two picks in this exercise. And it makes it really fun because I think Kerstad translates better. Martinez has a better path. If you're playing like fantasy baseball or something, I guess it depends on like where your team's at. But I was thinking right there with Aurelvis too. Davis Schneider swinging it still pretty well helps. You know, if he does slow down a little bit, that's where it seems like a no-brainer because I think he could pretty much fill that Davis Schneider role to a T. But Schneider, I think a little bit more in tune with who he is as a hitter. But that's, I think, the slam dunk number two pick. Are we going – we sticking with you?
Yeah, we're going to stick with me. We'll snake it, and then we'll snake it with you getting 2 and 3 in the pitcher department in that draft. I'm going to take your guy. I'm going to pluck him out from right under your nose. Joey Loperfido of the Houston Astros is number three for me. And it is, I think, a hybrid of the Aurelvis conversation where he fits into the lineup at the major league level and the Kerstad conversation where he's too good for minor league baseball right now. Loperfido is a candidate until the very end to make the big league roster in Houston. Mm-hmm. He did not make it. And now we're watching Jose Abreu / 068, 138, 085. And John Singleton / 229, 308, 286. It's time for Joey Loperfido to be in the Houston Astros lineup. They just lost a series in Washington to the Nats. Let's stop messing around. Joey Loperfido at this point in 19 games has 10 homers, has driven in 24. Has he punched out 31 times in 92 plate appearances? Yes. But 10 homers in 19 games. Get him in the lineup.
Yeah, I mean, look, this team's watching the season slip away. I know it's early, but what do we put out a stat on the Just Baseball Twitter that I'm pretty sure no team that has started this poorly, like the Astros have with that record, hasn't made the postseason, which is crazy because you think about like the Nationals and some of these other teams. None of them started this poorly from, I guess, you know, of course you can play with samples. There's probably teams that, you know, another 20 games in technically had a worse winning. I don't know, but regardless, that's not never a good stat. If nobody with your present winning percentage or lower through this many games has made the playoffs, not a good stat. And I think the way you got to try to shake that up is by bringing up a Loperfido. People talk about, oh, what about the K rate? What about the K rate? Look, he had one game where he struck out six times. Six. 0-for-6, 6 Ks. I have not really seen that. But I was talking to him about it, and I was like, dude, you've been great. He followed that up, by the way, with 3 home runs in a game. So it shows you how he can turn the page. And, you know, I was just like, oh, like, you got to feel like you're close, right? And he's like, yeah, but, you know, I just wish I could erase that 0-for-6 game because I feel like just it's kind of skewed, you know, my numbers overall. Your numbers, you know, are your numbers, but, you know, you just have one day where you're just not seeing the ball right. Or, you know, you have those days at work where you just feel like crap and you're not productive. You have a day where you don't feel good, couple bad calls, things don't go your way, 0-for-6, 6 Ks. Otherwise, and I hate it, but I love it. The take this sample, remove it, and then the numbers are this. But if you take away those 6 Ks, it's a lot more palatable. Even if you cut that down to 3 in that game, it's a lot more palatable. It's such a small sample to talk about strikeout rates that, you know, when a guy like Loperfido says, like, damn, man, that game sucked, and then turns the page and hits 3 bombs, like, I find it hard to not believe in those guys. And, you know, the other thing is he walks a fair amount. He's super versatile. I mean, they've had him in center. They've had him in left. They've had him in right in addition to first base. So it's not like when he gets up there, if you still want to give Abreu some ABs or whatever and try to get him out of it, give him the left-handed ABs, whatever it is, like Loperfido is a guy that can go play in other spots. It really is, I think, a no-brainer at this point. And yet he might not be the highest upside guy of the group that we're talking about because we got James Wood and other guys in here. But Loperfido's got big power. He's one of the leaders in minor league baseball with 10 home runs already. And again, 33.7% strikeout rate looks really bad. But otherwise, if you subtract 3 of those Ks from that just dismal day, all of a sudden that creeps back under 20% or sorry, under 30%. And now you're palating it a little bit more. Sometimes numbers become a little bit of like a, almost like a visual thing for us more than you're actually looking at the numbers behind it. But you know, there is going to be swing and miss. I think that's very clear and understandable. But at the same time, he's going to run into baseballs and he's going to give you a lot more beyond that than you're getting from Singleton and Abreu from a base running perspective, a defensive perspective. And I think you're also going to get a guy that could get better. While I don't know if you're going to get anything much better than what you've been getting the last year and a half from Abreu and even Singleton, as much as I love the story.
And both guys are on the wrong side of 30. Abreu, I think, is on the wrong side of 35. I think he's 36, 37 years old at this point. So, like, they replaced Yuli Gurriel with another guy that at this point is, like, kind of transforming into Yuli Gurriel without, like, the bat-to-ball effectiveness in Jose Abreu. So it's interesting. You have the next two picks.
Yeah, and the last thing I'll say on Loprofito, I think makeup-wise, you know, that's a very older, you know, established group up there. That's a guy that I think you can throw into the fold, try to inject some young life and a shot in the ass for that team. And I think he's a guy that's going to fit into a more, you know, experienced clubhouse and definitely has the, I think, the maturity and the makeup to jump in there and try to help him win and the familiarity because he was getting so much run in spring training. So hopefully we see him up soon and hopefully just more games will normalize that strikeout sample to more 25%. Yeah. Back to me. I'm going to go Kyle Manzardo. I'm going to be a lot more brief with this. Cleveland Guardians, they are playing well, but their pitching has been banged up. They're going to need to slug. They've been swinging it pretty well, but they've started David Fry and Esteban Florial in the DH spot over the last week plus.
Yeah.
Don't do that. I mean, Fry's been fine. I guess that's a guy that can like hit lefties. Sure. Manzardo's raking and really like looks like he's ready. He's not swinging and missing. He's walking nearly as much as he's striking out. He's hitting the ball hard to all fields, by the way. It used to be a little bit more pull dependent. Now we're seeing him go the other way for extra base hits plenty. 308, 400, 585 slash line. I mean, the expected stats are even better than the stats that you're getting. And he's elevating. Screams like a guy that's going to make that transition to the big leagues relatively well. But beyond that, I mean, you look at what they're rolling out in the DH spot right now. I know Florial doesn't have any more options. I don't really care. I think Manzardo needs to be up there sooner rather than later. I know they're not pressing as much, but that's a guy that helps them now.
So why DH David Fry when he can play catcher, first base, right field, left field, and third base? This guy has been an excellent utility man for you since he came up last year. Like, let him be a utility guy. So then it turns into a conversation of Florial versus Kyle Manzardo. I know who I'm picking. One of them's hitting 217 in the big leagues. The other's OPSing 990 in AAA. And he was billed as a guy that was immediately going to be up after that trade for Aaron Civale at the deadline. And like, yeah, he figured out, you know, life post injury that kind of hampered him through the front half of last year. But man, like, I'm with you. This does feel like a no-brainer that he should be on that roster, especially with a guy like Tyler Freeman struggling as much as he is and Will Brennan struggling as much as he is. Florial can still manage in an outfield spot. If you really want Florial in the lineup, just shove him in an outfield spot. Like, he's fine.
He's pretty good. That's the thing. It's like the defensive value is like kind of been part of what has earned him so many chances. You know, I don't know if
I was just going to say, like, so stop DHing a super utility guy in David Fry and stop DHing a guy that can give you defensive value in the outfield when you're running out a shortstop that just figured out center field this offseason.
Yes. No, I think that's a perfect way to put it. And again, we just talked about Jackson Holliday. Maybe Manzardo comes up and he struggles a little bit, but Manzardo's got a lot more professional at-bats under his belt. He kind of got the struggle out of the way last year where it was relative, but battled through some things both on and off the field and, you know, just persevered through that and got better and better, showed well in the fall league, continues to show well now. And I just feel like he's a guy that's done it all, done everything that he needs to do and is just about ready. But most importantly, you look at the big league situation and it's a no brainer for the reasons that we just laid out, especially as you mentioned with Brennan struggling and Freeman not really offering much. This is a team, and we continue to harp on this, that wants to slug more. they want to slug more. Well, you have a very easy way to slug more in bringing up Kyle Manzardo. And again, you can still get some of your other guys' ABs. I understand it's a very left-handed heavy lineup. If you're subbing out, you know, Brennan, then it's fine, or even a Floreal. And then Fry should be grabbing those at-bats against lefties, because Manzardo, that's the one area that I'm, you know, interested. Like, so far this year, it's small sample, hasn't been great. But I still think he's fine left on left. If you want to ease him in a little bit more, Fry takes those at-bats.
Sure.
One more pick for you.
Ooh, okay. This is where it gets a little tough, because we get to kind of the blocked range here. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to go with a Jordan Beck, just because, like, okay. Why not? I don't think Beck is as ready as some of these other guys, you know, in the Colorado Rockies system. I was honestly a little surprised it even got the shove up to AAA. But, man, like, let's just see what he can do at the big league level. He's hitting the ball so hard. He's really athletic. He, I think, brings a lot of different things to the table. This team at the big league level is just not that great. They could use some dynamic fun in the outfield. And, I mean, Beck, like, he's going to swing and miss a fair amount, I think, but he seems to be mitigating that pretty well so far this year, striking out less than 20% of the time. And the power is crazy. He gives you some speed. Can play all three outfield spots. Better in a corner, but if you ever need it, can play all three. And he's starting to walk a little bit more, you know, than we've ever really seen him walk too. Again, I think he could struggle away from Coors. I think it could be a big leap for him relative to maybe some of the other guys. But this is just kind of one of those no-brainer, send him up there, like, see what he can do. He's not, I don't think, getting any better. I don't think he's getting any better by just playing in Albuquerque right now. I just don't really see what benefit that serves him.
Yeah, I'm with you. I like that pick on Beck. And that was like the one guy that kind of had a clear path. I'm going to go with a guy where you do need to do some shuffling. Tyler Black of the Milwaukee Brewers.
That's who I was looking at too.
It's tough. As it stands right now, Hoskins is playing first, I don't know, every other day, I'd say. He's DHing a good bit too. But it's tough when you have William Contreras and Gary Sanchez going, like, fully healthy right now. William Contreras is catching every day. Sanchez is going to take that DH spot. So then it turns into, all right, is Hoskins playing first? If Sanchez is sitting, it's tough, because you can move Hoskins to the DH spot, and, like, Owen Miller has played first base recently. But, like, Oliver Dunn has started at third base in each of the last three games, I want to say. He might have sat on Sunday. If Tyler Black feels at all comfortable playing third base, I think you just do it. Although Joey Ortiz is there too. It's hard. It's
really
a big
tough
puzzle that you got to try and figure out. But Tyler Black is also hitting too well to be in the minor leagues right now. Through 19 games, Tyler Black is slashing .315, .409, .902. He's punched out 12 times in 88 plate appearances.
Yeah, that's pretty damn good. Like, and the crazy part too is, like, he's settling in on multiple fronts. Yeah, I think that the glove was not great out of the gate, even at first base, just didn't look comfortable. Now settling in there. You mentioned just the numbers that he's putting up, but he's really slugging now all of a sudden too. Over the last handful of games, multiple homers, multiple triples. He seems to be a triples machine, by the way, too. There was a hustle triple in the right field gap, right center gap. He just sprinted out of the box and was hunting three and got it. Like, I love that aspect that he brings to the table. But they also, you know, if you look at, oh, well, maybe you can plug in for Jake Bowers. The Bowers they traded for, you know, believe it or not. Like, I think it was a Avila and one other prospect they sent over that way. And I think they don't want Black to be up there to play 2 to 3 days a week. So especially when they want him to continue to get those defensive reps. Ortiz has been swinging it well, plays a great third base. It's really tough to figure out where he fits in, and that's what made it – that's what gave me the slight edge to Beck, because I think Black is more ready, but you really got to figure out where he fits in here. And I kind of wonder, man, like, does he turn into a trade chip for them at some point rather than a building block? Because I'm trying to figure out where he fits in even longer term, and it can get a little bit – difficult to sort out. I guess he's the future at first base.
That's what I was going to say. I think he would be at first base. I think that's the answer long term.
Or third, and Ortiz shuffles over to short
when Adames is gone.
The
open market. Yeah, but would you want to? Probably, right? Because Terang just looks way too good at second base to move him back to shortstop. So it would be Ortiz at short, Terang at second. And then it would turn into Black at third. I don't know. Like, if they really saw him as the future at third base, wouldn't they have played him there more than, I think, one time this year in Nashville? I think he's played first base in, like, the majority of his games.
Yeah, I don't know if that's in anticipation of, like, seeing the one way that he can get up this year, or if that's what they think his long-term home is. It's probably more like the latter, as you said, as you kind of alluded to. So yeah, I think it's just a wait and see thing. And, you know, they're going to have some vets kind of clear off the roster. So, you know, I think that's when they'll start to get to the bottom of it and figure it all out. But it is a really unique roster situation. But Black just continues to perform, and you figure, I mean, the thing is, it's one injury away, and he's the first guy up without a doubt. So, you don't wish for that, but it seems like that is, you know, something that just naturally happens every year. And he's going to be a guy that you don't even hesitate. You just know, okay, it's time for Tyler Black. Let's bring him up. Let's see what he can do. So I like that pick there.
Yeah. One more for me. And this is where I take James Wood. He's too good to fall off this draft, and we only have two more picks. James Wood is going to me at 7 with the Washington Nationals. Again, it kind of takes some finagling with the lineup right now because Jesse Winker's too good to sit at this point. Who would have thought? Lane Thomas is going to be an everyday piece in right field, understandably so. I know he's kind of slow out of the gates at this point. But then you got Eddie Rosario, who's been really bad. Joey Gallo, who's been really bad. Did you expect anything different there? I saw a note, the launch angle note, like in our group text. 40-degree average launch angle right now for Joey Gallo. What are we doing here? He's playing a lot of first base, so why not just slap Meneses at first, have one of those outfielders DH, get Winker out of the outfield, put him at DH, and then James Wood can play the outfield for you. It's easy with a team like Washington, and I know that they just took a series at home against Houston, but at the end of the day, it's the Washington Nationals. They're not winning the World Series in 2024. If a guy is performing this well for you and he's got this much prospect pedigree, you just get him in the lineup. And James Wood through 18 games is hitting .300 with an .880 OPS in Rochester. He looks exceptionally comfortable. And the biggest thing for me, 106 point jump from batting average to OBP. Yeah, he's hitting .306. But this guy's walked 13 times in 18 games. He's patient. And I was not expecting that from him this year.
Yeah, I mean, it's become one of those things where we talked about it. Even though he's slowed down over the last handful of games, it just feels like there's not much left to prove. Like, you know, he can perform in AAA, even if he has some ups and downs. And you know, I want to find out what he can do at the big league level. And I know we're going to at some point this year. So that's why when you're taking a top 10 prospect in baseball, who you know for sure will get up at some point this year, that's a no-brainer pick at this point, you know, in our draft. I just wonder, yeah, when they start to shift the focus that way, you know, they are paying what's Gallo getting, $5 million?
I think so.
Yeah, like, so they're going to
just is crazy.
Keep running him out there and hope that they can move him at the deadline, which, you know, how many times are people going to just keep doing this and giving up any prospects for him? It's wild. I still feel like it's pretty easy, like you said, to move it around and find room, despite the fact that, you know, a lot of guys are actually performing, you know, better than I think people were expecting. And, you know, with Abrams doing what he's doing too, I just feel like you want to almost start to get that young core working together and get those guys playing together and just see what can happen. Give Nationals fans, you know, more of a reason to come check it out. I think Wood's a no-brainer there, and I think we do see him up sooner than later, assuming that this little lull that he's had, you know, doesn't extend much longer. It's been just a handful of games where, you know, he's hit a bit of a snag, but that happens, especially when you come out as hot as he came out through spring training and, you know, in the early going this year in AAA. Last pick for me is tough, dude, because like Kobe Mayo, I really struggle to find a way for him to play. Like we're already shoehorning Kerstad in there. And now where the heck does Kobe Mayo fit in? He's 22. So they don't have a ton of reason to rush. They've got, again, O'Hearn swinging the way he's swinging it. And then I think in this instance, Kerstad's clearly ahead of Mayo in terms of, you know, pecking order and getting called up. So what do you do? Can you feasibly see a way that Kobe Mayo gets called up? I don't know if I can. In terms of like what it would take on the big league level, like what would have to happen?
It would take Westberg going 0 for his next 30.
He's been their best hitter.
He's been balling. Him and Gauser, like they've been killing. I don't know if there's a way at this point. Like, hey, maybe one of the first basemen goes down. But at that point, like, then it's Kerstad's job. It's tough, man. It's really tough. And the reason, like, it's hard to draft two guys on the same team here. Addison Barger is going to go unpicked because it's so rare to have a good Major League Baseball team have multiple openings for these guys. We're trying to figure out a way that Kerstad can fill in. We're trying to figure out a way that Aurelvis Martinez can fill in, let alone two guys supplanting two in their lineup every day.
Yeah. So here's my question. Well, I mean, here's the other thing, too, is that the freaking Blue Jays are paying Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, which is just so annoying. I don't know why they did that. And that makes it even more difficult because isn't it a 2-year deal for IKF?
Yes.
So like
2 for $15.
So you're not just going to demote him or move him or whatever. No one's taking that deal on. I don't know what the hell that was. But the crazy thing is, you know, they've been playing Addison Barger at third base now more again. He's been playing a little bit of the outfield, a little bit of third base. What do you do then? Like, who do you think? Clearly, we think Aurelvis gets a nod first. But Barger's been awesome and gives you outfield slash third base slash can also play second base versatility. The reason why Barger hasn't played second base is because that's where Aurelvis has been playing. And maybe the reason why Aurelvis has been playing second base is because Barger's playing third because of the fact that they may demote IKF to the bench and just say, crap, we're just going to pay you to be a really expensive, you know, Miguel Rojas for us, essentially. I'm actually going to go with Barger because I don't see a way that Kobe Mayo gets up. I don't. Like, it would legitimately have to be an injury to one specific player. Because otherwise you can shuffle things around and still figure it out. Barger, I think, is getting run at third for multiple reasons. And I think it's directly affecting Aurelvis and why he's playing second. But Barger can also play second. Barger can also play right. Barger can also play left. He can play third. I think what he's doing in a vacuum is more impressive in AAA. Also freak swing the other day on a pitch that was like three balls inside, not only hit it out, kept it fair. I mean, you know how I feel about Barger. I just think that the chances of him getting up are way higher than Kobe Mayo's. Even though Kobe Mayo is a much better prospect, Barger's still a top 100 guy for us.
Yeah.
Gives you the versatility. He's walking as much as he's striking out. He's hitting the living crap out of the ball. Yeah, give me Barger here. And I can't believe it, but a top 15 prospect in baseball is so blocked that he doesn't make this draft.
So the two guys that we left on the chopping block are both Norfolk Tides at this point. Kobe Mayo and Connor Norby. You are not on the cusp of the debut, according to the call-up, which is crazy. And they would be in 29 other organizations.
I hope I'm wrong. Can you see it?
No, I can't. Injury. That's the only way.
And what am I going to say? Like, oh, I feel like Westberg's going to tweak something. Like, I hope not. So it's just, and especially when it's injury to one player, because the way that the Orioles can shuffle it around, it's literally, I think, only injury to Westberg where you can see the Mayo direct line. Otherwise, it's going to be Kerstad first up. So that's what makes it really tough.
Yeah.
We'll fly through pitchers a little bit quicker.
Mm-hmm. I'm in.
All right. You want first pick or me? And what are the names that we're going through?
Actually, I get first pick, but before we do pitchers, quick break.
Yes, sir.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, Jack, you've got the list of pitcher names that we think are knocking on the door. Pitchers are always tough because you'll get that guy that just jumps straight up from Double A sometimes. And so we mixed in a couple that we think could potentially do that. Mostly guys that are closer to the big leagues in Triple A, just kind of were waiting. They're kind of expecting them to see them up sooner rather than later. Not as much roster discussion to dive into because it's really just what's a rotation look like. And unfortunately, with the rotation, like you just know that eventually there's going to be an injury, and it's just, you know, is he the first guy up to be able to fill that? Who are the names we got?
So I already wrote down my first pick, and you're going to get 2 and 3, but you should know who I'm going with. Paul Skeens is the first pick, like no shit. Paul Skeens at this point is punching out 19 hitters per nine. That's a K rate of what? 57.4%, 12 and two thirds innings. He's K'd 27 and walked 4. I think he's allowed, what, 5 hits? Yeah, there we go, and no runs. But the other names, aside from Paul Skeens, Sem Roberto with the St. Louis Cardinals, Cade Povich with the Baltimore Orioles, Doug Nikhazy, who's Double-A with Cleveland, Carson Palmquist, who's Double-A with Colorado, Mason Black with San Francisco, Christian Scott with the Mets, Drew Thorpe, Double-A with the White Sox, Caden Dana, Double-A with the Angels, Hurston Waldrop, Double-A with the Braves, and Will Warren. Is he Scranton or is he Somerset?
He's Scranton,
so Triple-A with the Yankees. Those are the names we got going.
You know who I'm taking. You know who I'm taking.
Who you got, too?
I got Christian Scott. Yeah. Of course. I got to. This Mets team looks good. I think they have to look at this as, hey, we might get some reinforcements back later in the year. You know, Kodai Senga is going to come back. They might have some other guys potentially be back and available. And Scott's going to be on some sort of an innings limit. Why not have him up now, help bridge the gap, and continue this hot start? What he's doing, you know, in Triple-A has been extremely impressive. Needs to continue to limit the long ball. That's, you know, the one thing that's kind of gotten him at points. Pretty much every single earned run he's given up has been like a solo shot. Striking out the world, I think you can look at, you know, what he's doing from a command perspective, and he's been doing that for a year and a half now. He's built all the way up to 95 pitches. The changeup hasn't even been there for him, and he's punched out 26 and 14 and a third innings. It's just a no-brainer for me, both from the Mets' perspective and from Christian Scott. You know, why waste any more bullets in AAA? I think he could be up there right around the same time as Skeens.
Yeah, and that it could be a week from now. That could be 3 weeks from now. That could be 3 months from now. I've got no idea. You've got no idea. Nobody has any idea. It's crazy.
Nope. All right. Which is the frustrating part, but also the fun part. Cause whenever that happens, like, again, talk about an anticipated debut. It's a lot easier, I feel like, to make the anticipated debut as the pitcher when you throw a 100 versus the hitter when it's like, oh, he's a good hitter. Like, yeah, but it's still really hard because guys are throwing 100.
You give Skeens a nice day in Pittsburgh. If he's at home and it's like 70 degrees at PNC and sunny, he's going to be sitting 102 in the first two innings.
Yeah.
Crazy. Yeah. Third pick, you got it.
Oh, man. Okay, there's a lot of different routes we could go here. I'm going to go Cade Povich because I've just been watching this guy starts with the Baltimore Orioles AAA affiliate, of course, in Norfolk. And, I mean, dude, he looks like he's kind of figured out how he wants to attack hitters, specifically like lefties. His arsenal is kind of designed to be able to get hitters out from both sides of the plate because he can kind of kitchen sink you, four seamer, changeup, cutter, slider, curveball. But what I've seen with lefties is he really establishes the fastball in the outer half. It's got sneaky ride. And then the slider just playing off of that, he has really made lefties look lost. And then it's the cutter off of that as well. It's a tunneling nightmare for hitters. And again, it was more of a command thing for him. He came up, had good command. Then the stuff ticked up and the command kind of went to the wayside a bit. And then now you've got a little bit of both. He's walking guys a little bit more than you'd like to see. But I still think that the command is much better when you look at it from just like a at-bat perspective and the way he's executing. And it's hard to argue against the results so far, where through four starts, he's an 0.83 ERA, spent out 33 and 21 and two-thirds innings, and just continues to get weak contact. It depends on what the situation is, you know, with Baltimore. I know Tyler Wells is banged up again. Like Bradish is rehabbing, looked pretty good in his last rehab outing at points, but then the breaking ball wasn't totally there. I don't know what their big league situation is, but you're always going to need an arm at some point. And I think Povich is clearly kind of leapfrog McDermott as that next man up, at least in terms of who is more ready.
Yeah, I can get behind that. He definitely has. McDermott, he continues to kind of fight himself, which is interesting. And, you know, we talked to him, a phenomenal conversation, loved it. And, you know, he made it clear that like he was kind of making leaps and bounds in how he was feeling as a pitcher, how he was remedying some of those command issues that he was dealing with at the end of the year. And they've just crept up on him at the beginning of the year. He's pitched in some like unforgiving environments, just like bad weather days. It's tough to pitch in bad weather days. I want to see how McDermott looks in May when you start to wake up and it's like, it feels like a nice day for baseball. But Povich, like, you don't have to wait for that. He's hit the ground running. He's figured it out. And that's the guy that's going to get the call first. And the fact that they have 6 and 7 on the starting pitching depth chart waiting like that with that much prospect intrigue, gluttony of riches. We've never seen anything like what Baltimore has right now. Okay, so I went Skeens. You went Scott, then Povich. I'm going to go Mason Black with San Francisco now. And it feels like a reach, but let me try and explain myself. I think that San Francisco has a very fun and very good front four in that rotation right now. Logan Webb is the most underappreciated pitcher in Major League Baseball. 7 shutout innings against Arizona. Again, nobody watched it because it started at 10. The East Coast bias is crazy. But Logan Webb is amazing, utterly amazing. Snell's going to figure it out. They paid him too much money not to. He's, you know, like he's too good of a pitcher to not figure it out. And, you know, frankly, he had no spring training. So he's trying to, you know, get himself right. Jordan Hicks has been a revelation as a starting pitcher. And Kyle Harrison, for better or worse, that guy is in your starting rotation. And then I go to the 5. Keaton Wynn has been good, not great. Keaton Wynn made 5 appearances as a swingman last year, and he was arguably better as a swingman at that point. So let's move Keaton Wynn to the 6th spot. Let's move Keaton Wynn to the long relief spot and get Mason Black up, because Mason Black is dominating the PCL right now. Four starts with Sacramento, 17 and two-thirds, 3 earned runs, 20 punch-outs, and 4 walks, 13 hits in 17 and two-thirds, and 20-4 in the strikeout-to-walk department. If you've got this waiting, make him a comfortable 5 start. Easy.
Yeah, I mean, I love that. I think when you imagine that you're taking a guy from the PCL and you're putting him into one of the most pitcher-friendly ballparks, and then also, you know, guys that make the leap, funky, always seems to play pretty well right away. He is funky, and he's throwing strikes. Funky with strikes in a pitcher's park, yeah, that'll play. I think he could plug in right away and be a great 5 for them. And, you know, I do wonder if, you know, that's something that, you know, ultimately can be a place where he settles in and just holds on to that 5 spot. So I love that pick. Cause I just feel like with where they're at, he's definitely a guy that could get an opportunity sooner rather than later, and allows him to put, like you said, Wynn in a spot that I think he'd be better in. I love the 2 fastballs, having the 4 seamer and then the sinker that gets him ground balls when he needs it. Nasty slider from that funky release, then mixes in a cutter and the occasional change. So it's a fun pitch mix as well from Black. You again or me?
Me again. I want you to try and convince me to stay away from Doug Nicasi here.
I knew you were going to go this way.
Why should I stay away?
I think the only legitimate reason I could give you is that it is very fastball heavy right now, and it's in Double A.
So Carrasco has been better than I thought, and Ben Lively gave them a way better start than I thought he would give them. So I'll stay away from Nikhazy at this point. I will go to Drew Thorpe. Things can't get worse. Like, it's insane. And I went on an insane rant on yesterday's Just Baseball show. Like, when did you really start following baseball league-wide? You probably started following the Marlins in 2004, 2005. That's when I started following the White Sox.
The vivid, like, I can remember the games, like, to a T, like, still now. Like, I know I was watching in 03 and 04, but 05, that Marlins team is where I really remember, like, everything. That, like, I remember the full season.
So I remember the whole Cubs and White Sox seasons from, like, 04, 05. But I put it, ballpark it at 08 when I was about 10 years old, where I understood the scope of the league for the first time. And like, that's really when I became a baseball fan instead of just a Cubs and White Sox fan. And I said, since 2008, when I was 10 years old, I have never seen a product this uncompetitive than the Chicago White Sox at this point. And like, I know that there are a couple of guys that are locked in to the rotation right now. Crochet is locked in to the rotation. Fetty, you paid him, locked into the rotation. Nestrini, good as first start, bad as second start. Cannon, good as first start. As you're listening to this, you might be watching Cannon throw. I have no idea how he's going to throw and start too. And then you've got Soroka. I love the story. I love the comeback thing. It's not working. 24 innings, 15 walks, 12 Ks. He's got a 7.5 ERA. So why not go down and go get Drew Thorpe? Who, like, Jairo Iriarte has yet to allow an earned run in Double A, but Thorpe not only seems more big league ready, but he's been dominant in his own right. In Birmingham, 3 starts, 18 innings, 10 hits, 1 earned, 18 Ks, 4 walks. If you're going to shove Jonathan Cannon up there, Nestrini's different because Nestrini's older, but if you're going to, I mean, shoot Cannon out of a cannon and push him up the minor leagues the way they did, why aren't you going to do that with Thorpe too?
The clock.
Who cares?
Do you think they want to start it? I think that might be the only thing to care about. No, like I want to see him up, but like, if you're losing no matter what, do you want Thorpe up there? You know, giving you 6 decent innings, and then you know you end up blowing the game anyways, and you lose, or just Jonathan Cannon go up there, give you 6 meh innings, and then you lose anyways too.
What's your option? This or a year from now? Like, it's either anytime this year or you wait until next end of April or next May. That sucks. I want to wait a year.
I agree. And also, again, I'm a big proponent of, especially guys like this, like, why waste the bullets? Like, he could learn a lot about how his stuff's going to play at the big league level because he's such a massager, you know, in terms of, yes, the changeup's an 80, but you know, it's a 90 to 92 mile an hour fastball with ride. It's a couple breaking balls that are good that he locates, but he's got to learn how to sequence and you know how that stuff's going to work at the big league level. Because with a changeup like that, you could just go fastball changeup and dominate Double A all year long and not learn anything. Like, it's just, that's easily what could happen. So I'm sure they like him working with Caro. I don't really know why he needs to be in Double A any longer. By the way, in 3 starts, 18 innings, 1 earned run, 4 walks, 18 Ks. He's been dynamite.
I'm going to go back to his starts with Somerset too. He made 5 starts with Somerset last year. Drew Thorpe at this point, by the way, record wise, he made 5 starts with Somerset. He was 4-0. He's made 3 starts with Birmingham. He's 3-0. So 8 starts in Double A at this point. He's 7-0 with a 1.12 ERA, punched out 62, walked 9 in 48 and a third. He's too good for Double A. Why would you send him to Charlotte when Norfolk put up damn near 30 runs there? Like, it's the most hitter-friendly ballpark in the International League. So have him skip the place that sucks. He's too good for Double A. Get him to the big leagues now.
I agree. I mean, I would love to see that. I'm just wondering if they just keep delaying it for the obvious reasons. I would love to see what he could do at the big league level. And he will get up sometime this year for sure. I just wonder how early. I'm with you. I mean, he definitely shouldn't be in Double A anymore. There's legitimately no reason for him to be there. dating back to last year, like you mentioned. I mean, the numbers have just been ridiculous. So hopefully we see him up. There's legitimately no one in his way other than, you know, the front office. So we'll see how they decide to handle that. This is where it gets a little bit wild, I think, at the next pick, because now you're reaching a little bit for guys that have to make a bit of a leap to get to the big leagues. And it depends on team situation as well, too, of course. And you go from like a Rockies with Palmquist, like could they potentially just say screw it and bring him up? Because, you know, again, why have him even throw in Albuquerque? You know, he's there's just no point. You might as well just have him learn, you know, at full altitude.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with Palmquist, actually, because I was looking at Robertsa and that's another name, but I'm looking at the Cardinals rotation and they're going to keep letting Michaelis throw. They're going to keep letting Gibson throw. And Mats has actually thrown well. And Sonny Gray's back and healthy and looks great. So I think it would require an injury. Palmquist has just been so dominant that I think it could really translate to big league success too. And especially potentially at altitude, where I think his stuff will still play really well because he's so funky from the left side. His last time out, by the way, against a good Somerset lineup, 6 innings, 4 hits, no runs, no walk or 1 walk, 10 Ks. So far this year for Palmquist, he's given him 3 outings. He's yet to allow an earned run. 16 scoreless, that is, 25 Ks. He has 7 walks, but 5 of those came in 1 outing where he was just effectively wild against Bowie. Otherwise, he's been 1 walk in the other 3 or the other 2 outings. And then, you know, walks were not an issue for him in spring training. It's just another one of those examples where the command's been pretty good now overall. The stuff looks really darn good. He's funky as heck. I think it plays. And if you're the Rockies, why not? You know, why not? He might end up being one of your more effective starters right away. It wouldn't surprise me at all. So that's a guy that I also think there's no reason, like we said, for him to go to triple. He could just skip over straight from double A.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. And like, I don't know. I would say, oh, you would like to see how it plays at altitude and whatever. You don't really need to. It took Ryan Feltner 4 years to turn into a Cy Young contender. So you're good.
And the last thing I'll say is, I mean, like, they've been going like bullpen starts sometimes and just like,
yeah,
like, Peter Lambert starting games, like, you know, Dakota Hudson, I know that they're going to give him opportunities, but you know, like, I just think it's a no brainer to have him up there sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
Me again.
You again.
As much as I want to say like, oh, Caden Dana, because it's the Angels, I just don't think he's ready. And I think they've actually surprisingly been careful with him, which is rare, extremely rare. Yeah. So I'm going to go with Sam Robertsa, though. Like, even though I made the case against him in terms of comparing him to Palmquist, what he's been doing this year in AAA for the Cardinals has been great. Gordon Russeffo has done some good things, too, by the way. He looks pretty solid. Robertsa's issue, we've talked about it dating all the way back to last year and early last year, was the fastball, the four-seamer just gets crushed. Like, it just always does. So his solution has been throw it less. He throws his four-seamer, and we were talking about this the other day. Like, we'd have to do like a dive onto it, but I don't know if there's any pitcher in baseball. Like, you'll see pitchers throw a four-seamer 20% and a sinker, a two-seamer 20%, but I've never seen somebody that just fastball, period. Like, you can combine those. He only throws a four-seamer, throw their fastball less than 30% of the time. He throws his four-seamer 22% of the time, and that's the only iteration of a fastball you're going to get. You get a curveball 28% of the time, a slider 25% of the time, and a changeup 24% of the time. All those pitches are solid. He's potentially 3 above average secondary pitches. So it's a really weird mask the fastball situation, but he's masking the fastball really well right now. And you don't need him to be a 3. You don't need him to be a 4. If he's a 5 and he's not just a human rain delay out there like they've been getting out of the 5 spot, yeah, he's probably an upgrade. And the Cardinals, you know, they want to hang around. They have reinforcements coming. They're not going to give up on you know, their season, because – I think they've been playing a little bit better lately, and you've got some future Hall of Famers or close to it on your team. You're going to ride it out. Sonny Gray being back is huge. I think they're going to be a little bit aggressive with some of these guys, and it seems like Robertsa could be the guy that they plug in and just see how he does. 22 years old, enjoying a nice stretch here. Those secondaries will play. Even if he's a 5 and dive guy, I think he's better than what they've got going right now. Last outing, 8 innings, though. So maybe not 5 enough. 8 innings, yeah. 1 hit, 1 run, which was unearned, 2 walks, 9 Ks. I mean, he might just force their hand relatively soon.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. And I called a start of his 2 weeks ago, I think. And I didn't see his best start, but I saw 2 really solid ones. I got a Tuesday, Sunday from Sem Robertson. And, you know, I would say he was kitchen sinking, but that really wasn't the case. Like, I don't know. It felt like he was mixing in an appropriate way that didn't feel like he was trying to mask anything. And those are the guys that I really like. That was Assad when I saw him a couple times in Iowa too. Like he wasn't kitchen sinking. You can look at him and say, oh, he throws like 6 pitches. He's a kitchen sink guy. Kitchen sink guys try to hide something. Like they try to hide a fastball usually. And Sem's not really trying to hide anything at this point, which I can get behind because that to me screams confidence in everything, even what could be labeled as a below average fastball.
What was fascinating is, you know, it got pillaged to like an OPS around 1,000 last year, but now that he's using it less and kind of lulling you with 82 with the curveball, 87 with the slider, 87 with the changeup, and then it's not, you know, low 90s with the fastball. When he does go to it, it's surprising hitters. And so far this year, they're hitting .188 against it. So it's allowing the fastball to play better as well.
Yeah. So I've got the last pick and I was ready to go with Nikhazy. But Doug Nikhazy just landed on the IL with an oblique strain.
Oh, shit.
And that sucks. Like, damn it. Yeah. Doug Nikhazy, in his first 10 innings, 1 hit, no runs, 4 walks, 13 Ks. Opponents are hitting .033 against it. So my answer would have been Nikhazy, but now I have to choose between, at this point, Dana, Will Warren, David Festa, and Hurston Waldrop. I would say Waldrop after a strong outing, but I don't want to because, frankly, I like the idea of Darius Vines and Bryce Elder holding down that fifth spot more than I like Waldrop trying to come up and do that. And I would have appreciated if Waldrop went short and punched out the world because then I could spin my way into saying, oh, he can come up and be a reliever for them. No, like he went 6 innings last time out. So you don't want that, especially with a first round pick. You want him to develop as a starting pitcher. Minnesota doesn't really have much space in the rotation at this point. It really becomes a battle for one spot between Louis Varland, Simeon Woods Richardson, and Festa.
Yeah.
I think Festa is probably the best of the bunch at that point, but Varland and Simeon are already like up pretty much. Like Simeon it's not even a nonstop flight. It's just like a drive. It's an Uber from St. Paul to Minneapolis. So you're fine there. But I'm not going Warren either. Like that's the thing. The Yankee rotation has no openings at this point. Everybody's been throwing well. I guess I'll go Festa because Festa for me, because I think Varland is better suited coming out of the bullpen. It's clearly not working as a starting pitcher, and he was good as a reliever when he was out of the bullpen in the major league. So might as well have him do that, and I'll take Festa over Simeon, I think. So, yeah, David Festa is my final pick, but I don't feel good about it.
It's weird because I think Festa is also kind of in that weird spot where I think he could be like an opener type, like 3-4 innings, and then you could piggyback Varland. I don't know. It's so slider heavy that it's unique, but that is the arm I would go with because I think he is the best of that group in terms of the ability to swing, get swings and misses, and what we've seen for stretches. I know he shoves. You texted me when you got to see him up close in person, in Indy, 4 innings, 2 hits, no runs, 2 walks, 5 Ks. Like I think that's kind of what he is, though. Is going to be that 4 inning guy. But that said, like that's, I think there's a more direct path for him than some of the other guys. We always talk about the Yankees never giving the Will Warrens of the world opportunity. They always trade those guys. And Festa could be really valuable even in a piggyback role potentially too, or in that opener with somebody else piggybacking, or they try to stretch it out to like a 5 and dive and go from there. So far, they've been managing the workload, hasn't thrown more than 69 pitches so far in an outing this year. But I'm with you. I think Festa makes the most sense, especially for a Twins team that, you know, is always going to be kind of trying to, you know, put their best foot forward and piece together that rotation and the struggles with Farland. And I just don't trust Woods Richardson, unfortunately, to be able to get up there and help them other than in that plug and play role when you really need to start.
And he was great in that plug and play, like 27th man for a doubleheader. He starts game two.
Yeah, shockingly good. So we'll see. But I think Festa would end up being better in that role even too, and could end up kind of taking that role from SWR. That'll do it for this episode. We got some fun stuff this week. We've got a mock draft updated. Going to be really fun to go over that. And then we also have the Tigers top prospects at the end of the week. That should be really fun. Stay tuned. We might also have an interview. We will let you know. But some fun stuff to go through this week. And excited to keep going through these team top prospect lists and keeping you updated on this draft class as well, because we're getting closer and it's getting pretty fun. So an updated mock will be a fun way to kind of go over some of these top performers in college baseball. Any final thoughts right now, Jack?
I want to see all these guys up. That's my final thought, especially the arms, too, in situations where, like, these teams need a starting pitcher. They're just not ready to go grab these guys. Just go start grabbing them. Hitters, I get it. And, like, I don't know. I'm still thinking about the Jackson Holiday thing because I don't like doing the negative discussions here. It's not fun. Like, we prefer to just hype up prospects and minor leaguers because they're all trying to achieve a lifelong dream. It's tough talking about big league struggles like this. Yep. And, you know, I hope he figures this out and it can become a non-story and he has a 3-hit day and then he follows it up with a 2-hit day. And then all of a sudden he's hitting .150 and then it slowly climbs up to .250, .260 at season's end. But man, Jackson Holiday rooting for you, man.
Shows you how hard this game is, man. This game is tough as hell. Whether you're playing or trying to analyze the players playing it, it's just so unpredictable and so difficult, but it's also so much fun. And that's why we love doing this with you. So thank you so much. As always, subscribe to the YouTube. If you could leave us a rating, help us grow the show, that would be awesome as well. And we'll talk draft with you in a day or two and Tigers prospects later this week.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.